I just happened to be reading something this week about bushfires in Australia. I'm a wee bit weather mad, and I think you already know that. So, it was some news about an article about the weather at the minute in Australia. Now, what can I say? I have an exciting life. They're really just hitting bushfire season at the minute. And the article was all about the preparations and the contingency plans that have been made to try and manage the inevitable fires that have already started to spring up over southern Australia. Obviously, our winter months are their summer months, and a combination of temperatures of more than 43 degrees. It's not 43 degrees in here. Windy conditions and large swathes of bush landscape mean that they are facing really perilous conditions at the moment. Now, I know you've probably seen the news over the years about the total devastation that these fires leave behind in their wake. There's homes ruined, lives lost, jobs, wildlife, landscape, all wiped out. Like the Australians call the 7th of February 2009 Black Saturday. They were the worst fires that country had ever seen. And 173 people lost their lives. 173. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? And so it's no wonder that the Australians live on high alert for practically 5 months of every year. Why am I telling you this? You may be sitting thinking, well, this is very festive for the second Sunday in Advent. I'm glad I came. If it makes you feel any better, there's no 43 degree heat for us, but there is a warning for snow this afternoon. Anyway, the reason I'm telling you this about the bushfires is because the images of the aftermath of those forest fires sort of remind me of the imagery used in Isaiah. Let me explain. Our passage is obviously the beginning of chapter 11. But if you take a quick glimpse back into chapter 10, you'll see that Isaiah speaks of the nations as large, grand, splendid cedar forests, cut down and devastated. You know, I like a bit of a context. So if you're interested, the background here is attacks by the Assyrians. Isaiah lived during a time when Israel and Judah were separate kingdoms, and the Assyrians had torn the northern kingdom of Israel apart and were continually attacking Judea to the south. This time in Israel's history has come to be known as the first Holocaust. 5 times in 40 years, this vast Assyrian army, this huge empire, stampeded over God's people, leaving terror, destruction, and devastation in its wake, over and over and over and over and over again. It's a bit like the forest fires that I started talking about. People were left with nothing but fear and pain. They started to rebuild, only to have it trampled over and over again a few years later. People were understandably hopeless. But in the midst of all this darkness and despair, Isaiah is given a message of hope for the people of God. In fact, it's a poem. Our passage this morning is a prophetic poem looking forward to a time when things will be different. This is hope offered in dark days. When any hope or change just seemed impossible. In the middle of a burned out wood, where it looked like there would never or could ever be any life again, a small green shoot starts to peek through. A sign of new life. Hope springs forth. A shoot from the stump of Jesse. Now, at first glance, this may seem a bit strange to us. From the stump of Jesse? What? Jesse was, of course, David's father, King David's father. But it was David who was God's anointed king. Jesse was, by all accounts, just a farmer. As a boy, David kept his sheep. It was David's glorious reign that pointed the way to the Messiah. So, why not a shoot from the stump of David? Wouldn't that have given a greater sense of hope? The return of the powerful Jewish kingdom like David's? Well, there's a few things to be said about that. The first is this. Every king that came after David had made a mess. They made a mess in some way or another. Even David had his fair share of disastrous decision making. But those that followed him brought weak leadership, godless ways, poor political moves, and they led the people to worship false gods. If the new promised king was a shoot from the stump of David, what could we expect but more of the same? What hope would that have offered to anyone? But what we have here is a shoot from the stump of Jesse. Not a king to follow David like the others, but a new David altogether. The mention of Jesse is unexpected and it packs a real punch. None of the kings that followed were ever called David. No one was ever again called the son of Jesse. So if Jesse produces a shoot, then it must be David. But this time, it would not be an imperfect earthly king like David. It would be the King of Kings, who would be the true fulfillment of the promise of David's reign. But there is more to this shoot than just fulfillment. It's also about the origin. The one who fulfills is the one who initiates. Flick a few verses forward with me to verse 10, and you'll see what I'm talking about. The new promised king, the longed for Messiah, is not only referred to as a shoot from Jesse, but also the root of Jesse. Can you see that this puts things in a completely different light on what Isaiah is talking about? This shoot, this promised king, who brings hope and new life, not only comes from the line of Jesse, but he is also the root support of it. The origin of it, there from the beginning. And so the Messiah is the root cause of his own family tree, awaiting the day that from within that family, he would shoot forth. Planned, initiated years before. In fact, before the foundation of the world. And then promised right back in Genesis 3. You may remember, right after the fall, God gives a promise that one would rise up to crush the head of the serpent. One who would be born of a human. A man who would be the hope for all mankind. The root of Jesse and the shoot of Jesse. The one who was is also the one who is to come. If you're anything like me, you'll find that a wee bit confusing. It's a bit hard to get your head around. But you know, Advent can be a bit confusing. Just as I was speaking about with the children, sometimes it's hard to know what Advent is leading up to. What is it that we're waiting for? During the dark nights of winter, do we wait for and anticipate Christmas when we celebrate the birth of Jesus as the light of the world? Or in the darkness that this world very often has to offer, is Advent a time when we look forward, not to Christmas as the celebration of Christ's first coming, but to the fulfillment of the second coming? In fact, some people call this the second Advent. Which is it? A celebration of the first hope or for the second? Well, the answer is both. Obviously, when we get our chocolate Advent calendars out, we're counting the days down to Christmas, when we celebrate what has already happened. And the kids are thinking about Santa and the presents and the toys when they open those wee windows. You know, we all know that Christmas is over-commercialized, that it has become too much about stuff. But there's also another side to it. There has to be a space for us to give good gifts. There is a time for us to be extravagant with our loved ones. Or actually, even better, those in need and whom we don't know. All things we do to try and reflect the grace and the abundance that God has lavished on us through the birth of His Son. Do you know, I say to Eliza this all the time. I say, Eliza, at Christmas time, we love to give good gifts. And she's thinking about Santa, but I'm trying to tell her, Eliza, at Christmas time, we love to give gifts. Why do we love to give good gifts? We love to give good gifts because God gave us the greatest gift. We can and should be generous because it reflects something of the nature of our generous God. Christmas is just a good opportunity to do that. And part of what we do through Advent is to wait for that special day when we can celebrate and reflect the grace that has already been given to us. When we look forward to the 25th of December, when we start to celebrate Bethlehem and grace giving, and also the start of something much greater. Because Bethlehem is not the end of the story. It's just the shoot. A baby in a manger. It's not much. A shoot, a start. Only the beginning of a tiny bud that would flourish into a branch. A branch that would bear fruit. And so Advent is also about another sort of waiting. Taking off the days. Opening the windows of our Advent calendars, lighting the Advent candles, looking forward to Christmas. All of this is symbolic of our wait now as the church. In fact, the wait for the whole of creation. In these days, we hope and anticipate Christ's return. And so our Advent period is about those two kinds of waiting. It's concerned with both the first coming and the second coming. Just like Isaiah's prophecy. It's a prophecy about both the first and the second advent. It's like Isaiah had a telescope or a pair of binoculars. You know the way if you get a telescope and you put it to your eye, you can see everything at the same time. You can see the things that are up close and you can see the things that are really far away. Well, it's a bit like what Isaiah is saying here. He sees things up close and the things far away at the same time. So more than 700 years ago, before Jesus was even born, Isaiah has this snapshot of the big picture. Just a snapshot. It's not like he sees it all laid out before him. He gets a tiny, tiny glimpse of the grand scheme of things. God shows him the shoot. The desolate forest. And the hidden, tiny, almost imperceptible sign of life. The shoot, the mustard seed, the baby born in a manger, two poverty-stricken teenage parents in a small, unimportant, oppressed corner of the world. To quote Nathaniel in John 1, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" But at the same time as the shoot of the first advent, Isaiah also sees the branch that will bear fruit. And he sees the second advent. He sees the Lord. He sees Jesus in power and in the glory with the Spirit of the Lord resting upon him. Isaiah sees Christ not as a baby, but as the King of kings, as the warrior and of the judge. A king with wisdom and understanding and with counsel and power. A warrior ready to fight with the belt of righteousness strapped around his waist. A warrior with the strength so great that he will defeat his enemies with just his breath. Do you see that in verse 4? With the breath of his lips, he will slay the wicked. And the judge who will judge the needy and who will uphold the poor. A judge who will make decisions with perfect justice and with perfect understanding. He sees Christ in victory. But more than that, Isaiah sees the fruit of his victory. He sees the wolf with the lamb, the leopard with the goat, the lion with the calf, the child playing near the cobra's nest. He sees the removal of the curse of death. He sees harmony restored in our broken world. Isaiah sees the vision of the new earth, the restoration of all things. And so, as we move from the desolated forest, the burned out, devastated, and lifeless at the beginning of our passage, to this amazing picture of something that almost looks like the Garden of Eden. It's complete transformation. Transformation that starts with a shoot. Isaiah shows us the big picture, and too often we miss it. We treat Christmas as though it's only about that one day in Bethlehem. Like the shoot in the end that comes to nothing. We act as though all we are doing is remembering an event that happened long ago. Increasingly distant. Increasingly irrelevant. So irrelevant, in fact, we're trying to write out Christ altogether. We have Winterfest. The winter holidays. We have a holiday tree. Does that look like a holiday tree? It's a Christmas tree. We have in our schools now. Schools are banning the nativity play so as not to offend people. Christmas without Christ doesn't make any sense. Too often we keep Jesus in the manger. We treat Christmas as a remembrance event instead of what it really is. It's not just a time to look back, but a time to hope in the things ahead. We need to keep our eyes on the big picture. And I can't deny that often we feel that we are like in that desolated forest. There's suffering and hurt. And we can feel just broken and devastated. Like Isaiah and the people of God during this time of exile, we can feel to have hope. Financial hardships, the death of a spouse, the loss of a child, betrayal in friendship or in marriage, and the pain runs deeply. But you know, we don't even need to have experienced any of these things, these personal tragedies. We just need to look around us and feel bleak. The darkness that surrounds parts of the Middle East at the moment, Ebola in Africa, the ever-increasing number of inquiries into past abuse, especially in Northern Ireland. The impacts of human trafficking. The world can seem like a barren place. But every now and then, we see these green shoots. New life breaking through. Signs of the kingdom to come. An unexpected glimmer of light. A word of forgiveness after a great atrocity. An act of kindness across enemy lines. Peace in a place you would never have dreamed of. A new life. A new way to live after the loss of a loved one. A smile. A hope. Tiny reminders that God is at work. It's not much, but it's enough. Just enough to show us that these dark days of Advent will one day be brought to an end by the light of the world. Just enough to remind us that in the days of loss and pain, that there is something much, 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 much better ahead. The shoot that brings life and transformation to a ruined cedar forest brings life and transformation to our broken humanity and world. To each of our hearts. As we heard earlier in our service, it is Christ who is the healer of hearts. It is Christ who is the binder of wounds. He is our comfort because it is through his work on the cross that all of this has been and will be accomplished. And so during these dark days of Advent, during every day to come, while we wait for the return, he who is the shoot of Jesse and the shoot from Jesse, he is the banner to which we rally. He is the hope in which we cling to. At Christmas time, we talk about peace and joy and hope. This is the only place where we're going to find it. Not rushing around in the presence. Though they will, it will be good. I hope it will be good. Not in the perfectly decorated Christmas tree. Nor in the gifts you will give or receive. Not even in the family dinner. The only place where you will find this peace, this joy, this hope for tomorrow is Christ, the shoot of Jesse. As Christians, that's what we have to cling to. That is our hope.